gentlemen. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the Salera Report John Rapoport, who I always go to for when I want to talk about a topic that really takes a lot of deep understanding and history to understand. I always go to John for the most challenging subjects. And I wanted to have a conversation with you about pedophilia, because I think the chances of a major pedophilia scandal happening in the United States — it's been happening in Europe and other places, but happening in the United States this coming year or two — is very real. And I want to make sure, if it happens, that you have the insight you need to understand what's going on, but also if there are children you love, children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, people around you, young people, you know how to you have a plan to manage the communications with them, because it'll probably be on the news. So, John, thank you very much for joining me on the Salera Report, particularly for something that intersects with so many things you know about: secret societies, mind control, corruption, politics, you name it.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
So I want to go back. I think one of the reasons I'm concerned that there could be a major scandal is we know — I'm of the belief that Trump won the election not on the day of the election, but approximately a week before, when NYPD and FBI getting court clearance to look at the Anthony Weiner laptop. The suggestion being that there was a very serious pedophilia network going on in Washington, including in and around the Clinton Foundation. And this is referred to as Pizzagate, is the name of being given to the scandal. And it just won't go away, because there's so much that came out in the Podesta emails that WikiLeaks dumped out right before the election. And I didn't know if you wanted to mention anything about Pizzagate. We'll bring it up again, but any thoughts on the fact that Pizzagate is inspiring this conversation at this time?
Yes. Obviously, if anyone has bothered to read some of those emails, certainly the Podesta emails, you see the tortured sentences with references to pizza, cheese, etc., sausage, and so forth, which make no sense, really, unless they're talking in code, unless they're using terms that, some of which the FBI in a report already indicates potential reference to pedophilia, children. So that sparked a tremendous crowd research operation that is not organized from any top or controlled, and it just continues to go on and on and on. And I think it would be very foolish to discount it as the ravings of people who are just looking for something that isn't there. And there's something going on. And I don't pretend to, have the final word or anything close to it on exactly who, what, where, and all of that. But it just seems obvious here that we're talking about something real that's been badly concealed. It involves very high-level figures. The network, when you use that term, it doesn't necessarily mean, again, that there is some ironclad structure here. It means there are overlapping perversions and interests among people who know each other and who share certain information and enable each other. So that has exploded. And I agree with you. It's not going away.
Right.
And I do believe that we could see something more specific happening, as you say, in the next year or two.
Well, I worked for a cabinet secretary who I believe was being blackmailed about pedophilia during the Franklin cover-up. And I've never seen a human being so afraid he was more afraid than a person is when they're facing death. And it reminds me tremendously, if you watch Rubio, McCain, Graham, they've been, you have so many people who are behaving in absolutely bizarre ways, almost like children, and very much in sort of states of panic, doing what they're told. And it reminds me, so the feeling of it is exactly the feeling I had when I was dealing with it in Washington. So, you know, if you keep watching the ripples that are coming out, as, you know, we're watching a new administration that's trying to turn all the money and the power, and of course, you have people who don't want that to happen, and politicians who have control files, and you're getting very ludicrous behavior going on. And I think it helps to understand this on background to help explain why a politician with a control file would be so desperate as to behave in ways which clearly appear to be ludicrous. So, okay, well, let's talk about the history, because pedophilia and the use of pedophilia to manage and control a population is very, very ancient. This goes back generations. This is not something new. And I know you have studied a lot about secret societies and mind control both. And so maybe if you could just dive in and give us a little short history of secret societies, mind control, and how pedophilia fits in historically.
Well, I'll give you a couple of examples. I became aware of Valerie Wolf, a psychologist, in the mid-1990s. Because she had a couple of patients who were very troubled indeed, and in her work with these patients, things began to come out about how they had been part of mind control experiments, government, U.S. government mind control experiments as children. Under some kind of guise, which was not entirely clear, but it appeared that their parents had handed them over into these programs, perhaps thinking they were something else, some kind of training. Again, to me, unclear. But during the 1995 government hearings about radiation experiments on American citizens, which had gone back decades, and now some of which was coming out in the public record, this hearing was set up in order to bring to light a certain amount of information about these experiments, in which people were fed radioactive substances, terminal cancer patients were given excessive amounts of radiation in hospitals, all manner of terrible things had happened, starting in the 1940s, I'm going to say. And an apology was going to be attached to all of this, and so on and so forth. Well, Valerie Wolf, the psychologist, was one of the people who sent a sheaf of testimony from her patients and other materials that she had gathered to the committee, and lo and behold, she was okayed to testify, and she brought her patients with her. And this testimony is on the record. The Committee on Radiation, the proper name of the committee is not in front of me. This testimony took place in front of this panel, where these two women, maybe it was three, said, yes, we were subjected to radiation as children, but this was part of a wider-ranging mind control operation. And when they got through, the panel just absolutely didn't know what to do. And it was more or less, well, thank you for your testimony. Now the next witness is going to be, because they just, you know, it was just staggering. And I was told that in the committee room, when these two women finished their testimony and there was a recess, other people who were sitting in the room got up and went over to them and said, thank God you said that, because the same thing happened to me, and the same thing happened to me, and the same thing happened to me. So where pedophilia links into this is quite obvious, because one of the perversions associated with mind control is pedophilia, and vice versa. They tend to go together, because in secret societies, the whole point is absolute control, domination, all of the, you know, the typical kinds of intentions and practices. And this would involve sexual depravity. So this was maybe my first introduction to something of this magnitude, you know. Of course, we have John DeCamp's book on the Franklin cover-up about a child prostitution ring in Nebraska and Washington, D.C., and points in between.
Right.
If you go back, and I have had conversations about this, so I'm not just talking about reading here, but firsthand reports. You go back to the most elite prep schools in England in the 1950s, for example, which would mean certainly earlier than that as well, where the cream of the crop are being educated to become future leaders of England. The, what shall we call it, the scraps of the empire were still there, the colonial empire, but aside from that, just, you know, our future leaders. These schools were prisons. Of course, there were no cell phones, there was no internet, there were no computers, there were no telephones. The parents dropped off the children, and they were living there from a very early age all the way through high school, what we would call high school. Elite, elite. And for various reasons, the most cynical and perverse and masochistic and sadistic treatment was then applied to these children over years and years and years. And you couldn't snitch, because then the other children who had done horrendous things to you, including sexual things like rape, would torture you. And when I say torture, I don't mean waterboarding or something like that. I mean disfigurement for life, to put it mildly, would be one of the consequences if the other children learned that you as a child had snitched to somebody, like your parents or like officials, who knows who. So this was the way the elites were brought up in England for a very long time. And playing dirty tricks on each other, I mean, that was just every day. Every day. Beatings, rapes, gang rapes, on and on and on and on. It was what you could call a secret society of its own, and according to a perverse version of survival of the fittest. If you can come through this without total destruction of yourself, then you will be able to do anything. We can send you to India. We can send you to any of our other colonies. You will be ruthless in your treatment of these people and never blink, because this is what you've been brought up on. Well, this is a culture of pedophilia, among other things. And so it naturally goes on and on generationally.
Right. There's no doubt it was an intergenerational practice. And, you know, I've gone back and really researched the history, and it was much more the mind control and the sort of intergenerational imprinting using these techniques was very much organized and run by the secret societies. And what is very interesting to me is that the Nazis did an enormous amount of experimentation in the camps with mind control and other techniques of control, including mind control. And when you brought the Nazi scientists back to the United States and sort of integrated them into the structure of academia and the think tanks and the various government agencies, and then you added the black budget. You added this huge, enormous amount of secret funding that could be used in a variety of ways. You integrated what the secret societies were doing with a governmental infrastructure with essentially infinite amount of money. And you did it under the governance of people who believe in slavery. And of course, if you believe in slavery, the problem with instituting slavery is the general population will rebel. But if you can make an invisible kind of slavery with mind control, it's so much more profitable because, one, the general population won't rebel, but number two, you know, they won't be able to tell who's a slave and who's not, at which point you'll be able to command total obedience. And, you know, if you're managing trillions of dollars, because one of the reasons I keep coming into this is financial fraud. If you're managing trillions of dollars, it's much easier to manage them if you have mind control slaves doing everything. One, they can't even necessarily remember what they did, but two, it's a lot less expensive ultimately, particularly if you can get the training costs down, which is one of the things I think behind the black budget they've been working on for decades. So, you know, this is a society-wide control mechanism, which is essential to running centralized control and making it economic for the people centralizing control. And, you know, it sounds gruesome until you really dig in the way you have and studied what's been going on. Because I think the question for a lot of people is, how could this have all been going on and me not know it? And that's a question, John, that you handle in many areas. You know, I think vaccines is the one I always think of where, how do you get families, you know, for many decades to do things that are, you know, deeply dangerous and harmful for their children and get them to do it gladly? So that's the question here. How can so much of this be going on and people not know?
Well, first of all, as it turns out, I'm afraid, when people think of such and so pedophile network is going to be exposed or might be exposed, or we just heard about this or we read a little bit about it and it's so shocking, this is not such an exception to the rule as people imagine. So their thinking is wrong to begin with. As you say, this practice has been going on since the dawn of time in power circles all over the planet, in many, 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 many different cultures, not just in the West, for example. You know, so it takes a retuning of understanding to see, okay, so I haven't seen this on the front page of the New York Times every day, but that doesn't mean that it hasn't been going on in many different places. In religious circles, I mean, we know all about the Vatican and so forth. So that reattunement is necessary. Don't consider this a just an unbelievable and shocking exception that is, you know, okay, so in one out of a billion places where this could have happened, it did. It's not that way. It's never been that way. To me, that's the way people keep themselves from being able to understand what's going on to begin with. And then as far as how knowledge is kept from the people, well, how are you going to make a case based upon evidence that indicts clearly a certain group of people who have been engaging in pedophilia and mind control for a long time? How are you going to do that? On what basis? And if you begin to think about that, you see the difficulties. What am I going to get? Documents here? Films? Photographs of famous people? How is this going to become a convincing case when the whole point is to conceal it and hide it and to blackmail other people who are engaged in pedophilia so that they don't reveal it either? And this would include people, of course, in government, in media, and so on and so forth. So there are built-in mechanisms against exposure.
Well, the other thing we've seen is because we have many different documented cases, and I want to run through some of them. So there have been many scandals where this has come out, and the reality is the people who have done a good job of documentation, you know, are facing enormous amounts of violence and assassination. People get killed. It's very, very dangerous. So let me just run through some of the cases, because I think one way to understand this is to go through one of the heavily documented cases. So we have the Catholic Church scandals, and if you look at the litigation that has been documented and won on the pedophilia by the church, it's quite extraordinary. I mean, I think the numbers, it was several billion dollars just for litigation in the 80s. And the 90s is when it really blossomed and exploded. I've talked a lot about the church scandals because I really feel the church took the... Two things have happened. One is the church basically was involved in pedophilia networks with the... particularly with the secret societies. And the church has really taken the whole fall for the thing. And you kind of wonder why. And I believe one of the reasons is the telecommunications network was really able to replace the storefront church as one of the, you know, with the access to local information. So the church had the confessional booth, but, you know, now we have the telecoms who can get the same information for much cheaper. So I think they were really sort of outwitted by the Freemasons on that one. But the other thing is, if you look at the church litigation and scandals, you know, the cover story, this was all horny priests and nothing else. Whereas in my experience, those, you know, the priest was really the cover story and the pedophilia network was there to provide, you know, children and sexual services for much higher up in society. And if anything, the priests were just the handlers. And that hasn't come out on the church scandals, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the most difficult part to bring out into the light for many different reasons.
Right.
So, you know, what's in... Christopher Hitchens used to call the Catholic Church a rape racket, rape protection racket. That's the way he phrased it, right? And so you see a piece of it, but as you say, you don't see the organization in terms of, well, we are actually the suppliers, and for a price or for a favor or for whatever we want, we can supply you children. And then we're in business together. And of course, it's to our mutual benefit for this never to be disclosed. But then you have, you know, smaller groups, Aleister Crowley or Crowley. You have secret societies. Only the tips of the icebergs crop up, like the story that sort of floated for a little while about Grace Kelly in her later years and involved in some kind of sexually perverse secret society in Europe. You get a little hint here, a little hint there, and then the story disappears. In the case of the Franklin cover-up, you get testimony from a few children as grown-ups who were victims, but then, you know, it's easy to say, well, they're lying. We can show criminal records on these people. So their testimony is not going to really fly in court. We can't bring a court case here. But it goes on. It continues to go on. People find each other who are involved in this. They become allies. And people in very high positions of power want more power of any kind. Perversion, sexual perversion for them means domination and more power. And so they drift into pedophilia as an example of that, because they can't deal with life on any other terms except I must have more power, which I define as domination over other people. This became the undercurrent, the spiritual and psychological undercurrent of colonialism itself, of all the empires, the colonial empires, wherever you find them. Oh, we now have a whole population of people that we can dominate and enslave and control. And so people who become leaders, so to speak, in that operation, that's what they're bent on. They see it as, this is the playground I can operate in with complete impunity.
Well, that has me bring up the DynCorp case, because we had DynCorp is a leading, at the time was the leading contractor, defense contractor at the State Department, was and had many contracts in the enforcement area. And we know they had contracts through the U.S. government and the U.N. in Europe, and there were two instances of litigation brought by DynCorp or former DynCorp employees against their sex slave trafficking operation, including one all documented by Army CID of the what's called the GTR, the Government Technical Representative, engaging in sex slave trafficking and owning slaves in association with the local mafias. And what was interesting is there was a real effort by a variety of reporters to bring these stories out, because with the litigation, you had tremendous documentation of this. It was all, you know, absolute fact going on. And in fact, last week we had The Whistleblower, which is a movie made out of one of the cases. And it was very interesting because Richard Armitage, as a official at the Department of at State, wrote up a letter saying, you know, there is no reason to penalize a corporation just because of the errant behavior of a single employee. when it was clear, now it was interesting because it ended up as a cover story on Insight magazine, hitting the desk of every congressional member, and that I personally emailed it to the head of IT contracting at every a federal agency. And and sure enough, the next week, DynCorp got two huge contracts. I think one was from the Navy and one was might have been the State Department. And then when the Iraq War, they got a $500 million sole source contract to run courts and enforcement in Iraq. And I was absolutely convinced that the slave trafficking was part of their job. You know, my question was, are we literally organizing with these invasions and disaster capitalism, rounding up, you know, the available kids and shipping them out? Is this one of the, you know, one of the natural resources we're drilling for here?
And you could even say, was part of the reason for launching the war, you know, to cover over and divert attention from this burgeoning pedophilia scandal. Well, what we need now is a war. I mean, let's be right, frank and brutal and simple about it. We need something that's going to unify the entire nation, and we're going to have to make up the reason for it, and it's going to have to last a long time. And when it's over, nobody will even remember that any of this happened that was threatening to expose us.
Right. So two of the examples I use to help people understand this are the Franklin cover-up, because you had several very courageous people, including John DeCamp, who was a very respected Nebraska legislator and attorney, really document this. And of course, the legislature in Nebraska tried to do something about it. They investigated, and one of their investigators was, it appears, assassinated. So there's tremendous documentation. I've always believed one of the reasons Bill Colby was assassinated was partly because of his role in sort of in the Franklin cover-up. And I believe he told DeCamp or one of the other investigators, you know, you'll never be able to bring this out. It's just too dangerous. So, but still, there's a, John DeCamp wrote a book called The Franklin Cover-Up, and it's going to be one of our books for recommended for 2017, because I think it's by going through one case deeply that you can really see how serious this is. And it's, you know, it's funny, John, I've spent from 2000 until very recently in the financial community being a lone voice saying it's going to slow burn, and all these folks saying it's going to collapse. And they say, you know, I say, no, it's going to slow burn. They said, no, it's going to collapse. And I think the primary reason is my sort of deep knowledge about the control systems and the control file network and how it integrates now with telecommunications and digital technology. And, you know, on the litigation, I saw how the speed at which they could drop into a place and control everything, both through the secret societies and governmental networks, which are very integrated at this point. And you can't believe the awesomeness and tightness of the control, county by county throughout America, unless you've lived it. And I think it's much greater. And every time I tried to talk to the financial people about the real nature of control, including pedophilia, they would say to me, "I just won't go there. It's too dark." Mm-hmm. And I used to say, "But wait a minute. You know, we can't break free of this until we can deal with it. And if we can't even talk about it or look at it, how are we gonna break free?" So there was this deep, deep double bind in the population. They didn't want to look at what was really going on. It was funny. I read something the other day where somebody said they estimated that 40% of the American population had been through this kind of experience. I have no idea what the number is, but could it be 40%? Absolutely. You know, one of the things I wanted to mention was the elites who would ever, you know, sort of get questioned about this, whether this was a good idea or not. They kept saying, "Well, look, you know, the fathers and uncles are going to do it to these kids anyway, so we might as well take them, and, you know, and as a result of our appreciation, we'll educate them, or they'll get all sorts of benefits." I mean, there's no doubt that they believe in what's called imprinting. So a farmer, when a new animal is born, will hold it when it's born or do things to be with it, to kind of imprint, is what it's called. So they believe there's an imprinting going on that creates intergenerational obedience. But their feeling about the deplorables is such, they figure, well, the deplorables are going to do it to themselves, so we might as well have the benefit, and then, you know, then the kids will be imprinted and we can use them in their companies. And it's true, there, a lot of parents would turn their kids over because this is how you got to rise. And of course, one of the reasons no one wants to talk about it is one of the great benefits in society is not money, but social prestige. You know, and how can you be socially prestigious, in fact, if you're just, you know, you got to where you got by being a sex slave? It's very hard for CEOs to admit that, or presidents. So, but I think the other thing is, I think it's imperative that we understand we're in a society where the leadership believes in slavery. They believe in slavery, they practice slavery, and slavery is a very, very profitable business.
No doubt. No doubt that that's true. And as far as cover-ups concerned, I mean, look at the Jimmy Savile case.
Whoa!
Where you have I don't know, somewhere between, what does Scotland Yard admit, 400 and 700 accusations of rape, assault, pedophilia, etc., over a very long period of time, none of which were really investigated. And he was, you know, Prince Charles, thought he was a great, great guy. He got all sorts of awards and honors. He gave away lots of money to charities and so forth and so on. And a broadcaster. And none of this really emerged until after he died, or close to when he died. I mean, we're talking about a very, very long career.
Long time.
You know, so you've got media, you've got police, you've got politicians, you've got corporate chieftains, all committed to keeping this from really being exposed, to say nothing of all the connections that this guy had, pedophile connections,
right,
to other big shots in England.
Well, what you see is, what you see with the Seville case is, it's clear this is considered to be a personnel benefit of a certain status. So this is just simply your right when you achieve a certain status. This is one of the benefits you get. It's kind of like having a 401k, you know, if I'm, you know what I mean? So there was one thing I was going to mention. What was it? Oh, our movie this week is a remarkable movie called The Finders, made by a wonderful director who's just started a movie company. She was an actress for many years, and it's called The Finders. And it tells the story of a mayor in a New Jersey town who bumps into this by accident. The finders try and kidnap her kid. They mistake her kid for another kid. They try and kidnap her kid. And so she gets onto it and gets the big, she's running for the Senate and wins the Senate race during the movie. But she's having to deal with the CIA and enforcement, who suddenly are all paranoid about this. And of course, the big question is, will she play ball or not? And very interestingly, to deal with the complexity of explaining the pedophilia networks and how they work, somebody gives her audios from the Solari report, and she's, while she jogs through the town, she's listening to me explain how this all works on the Solari report. So it's our first, you know, it's our first integration into a movie. It's very clever the way she does it. But and we have it up on the website, so we've had it for subscriber only, but we made it public this week. But you see the problem of somebody coming up the political ladder and bumping into this, and all the conundrums of how they're going to handle it and how nasty it really is. So it does a wonderful job of helping you understand the control file system and its sort of integration with pedophilia. Anyway, so I wanted to mention that. But let's come down to Pizzagate and the Anthony Weiner laptop, because, you know, the implication, if you read it, is you have a tremendous number of people in the media and in Congress and Washington who have control files from this stuff. So we're talking about a lot of people, not a few people. And it's interesting, we just saw Trump's inaugural speech, and one of the things he said was, he said, y'all have, you know, had a negative return on investment to taxpayers. Now, what he said was, you know, you've made money while the people suffered. And so he's pointed out that the money system isn't in alignment. And of course, his goal is to get it in alignment. Well, what's his biggest challenge? He's got all these people who've got huge control files who are scared to death all this stuff is going to come out. And it's interesting, if you look during the campaign, a couple times he zinged people on things that were in their control file, and they suddenly pulled out of the race with magic speed. So clearly you've got an administration who knows how to, you know, play with dirty pictures, you know, and knows how that game works. And so the question, I want to come down to what happened at Christmas which is Putin gave his Christmas address, and I've published it on the Salieri Report several times, and in it, he talked about the depravity of the West and twice mentioned pedophilia.
Yeah.
So you have Putin now talking about it publicly on the international stage, and you've got Trump coming in and saying, we're going to reverse how the money works, but you've got thousands of people literally in Congress and the media who have these control files and are scared to death. You know, and the combination looks explosive to me, but it helps to explain why. I mean, you're literally, I watched a CNN presentation the other day where I had watched the speech where Trump went to the CIA, what he said and what he did and how they reacted. And they proceeded to describe it in a way that had nothing to do. You know, it was complete contradiction. It was almost like they said, okay, well, you know, he went to Zimbabwe instead of Virginia, and he said, you know, the sky is green instead of the sky is blue. And you're like, what are you guys doing? And I thought, oh, wouldn't I love to see your control files? So, now, maybe they're just, you know, maybe they're just working for $300,000 a year. I don't, you know, it doesn't have to be dirty, but it can just be money. But you're literally watching that kind of ludicrous behavior that you see. As I said, I watched a cabinet secretary go through this, and you see people just, you know, they will do anything, no matter how ridiculous it is. So if you see what Mario Rubio did at Tillerson's confirmation hearing, it was just stunning. I was just floored, because here's a guy who's acting like a clown. You can't even. Then I saw Maxine Waters give an interview. She was clearly reading off a teleprompter, and she made absolutely no sense.
Yes, I.
You know, it's one thing to do something. It's another thing to do it in a way which is wholly and completely ineffective. But there she was. You know, and Maxine Waters is just not that stupid. But she looked like she had an IQ of 12. And you realize, okay, well, she's been told what to do, and she's reading her script, and she's scared to death. So, you know, there are many things that go into a control file. So I'm not saying it's all pedophilia, but, you know, you're watching people behave in ways that are not particularly logical, you know, and this is definitely a part of it. But I bring up Putin's speech because I think, you know, what Putin was saying is, we reserve the right to dish this out. You know, this was a warning.
It could very well be. I'm sure that they are aware of a great deal of this. As far as the media is concerned, maybe, I don't know, 6 weeks, 2 months ago, I found through somebody's story a link to a Washington Post article, maybe 10 years old, that had been removed from the Post website, about Tony Podesta and his art collection.
Mm.
Something that came up in the Podesta emails in one way or another, by implication or whatever. And this was a sort of an art piece about Tony's art collection. And Tony Podesta is the brother of John Podesta, and they are both very important political power players in Washington on the Democratic side, have been for a very long time. And Tony and his wife have parties at their house, and major people show up, and all of that, the usual. And the article mentioned that in one of the bedrooms in the house, there were photographs, art photographs, of naked suburban teenage children taken by an artist, a photographer, all very much out in the open. And Tony's wife was quoted in the article as being very amused by the guests' shocked reactions when they would just traipse through the house and look at these photographs. But of course, that's all that the story said. And it was sort of presented from the point of view of, well, you know, I mean, this is art. You know, so if these people are too provincial to understand it, it's amusing. And I kind of had a good giggle over the fact that they would stop and didn't, you know, want to look at it and looked away and whatever, whatever, whatever. So I wrote an article and I said, if you want to think about where the media starts and stops, here's a good illustration. Because what questions would you want to pursue if you were investigating this? Number one, who are these children? They are suburban children from at least middle class, if not wealthy, homes. Who gave the permission for these photographs to be taken? Was it at the children's request? Doubtful, highly doubtful. Did the parents consult with the children in some way? You know, they're talking 13, 14-year-olds. They sat down and had a conversation about this? Who are these parents? How did the photographer meet these parents? Do you think a photographer was doing cold calls in a suburban neighborhood in Maryland? Knocking on doors and asking parents whether their children would pose naked for photographs? No, there's a network. Somebody said, oh, so this is what you want to do. I could hook you up with a few parents. I'm sure they'd be interested. Yeah. Marge and Bill, sure, talk to them. And they know people and that, blah, blah. What is that network? How did this all happen? Is this not a prosecutable offense on some level of child pornography displayed out in the open as art? Is there no investigation possible of how permission was granted and on what grounds for these photographs to be taken?
One of the advantages of getting everybody deeply in debt is it's much easier to get your hands on the kids. So, you know, some of those parents may have been getting out of a foreclosure.
Could be. Yeah, we'd like to know about
that.
I suspect that other of these parents are part themselves of some sort of porn, pedophile, something network, and so they're already clued in, as are their children on some level.
Right. Right. It wouldn't surprise me, John, if one of the – you see a lot of stings in Washington against government officials, government employees – caught watching child sex porn, it wouldn't surprise me if you get them over a barrel with one of those. You know, you catch them watching child sex porn on a government computer, and what you bargain for is access to their kids.
Sure, that would happen too. But my suspicion in this case is that you're talking about willing participants, by and large, that are already involved. And the capper on this, I have to say, is that I wrote a letter to a significant, or an email to a significant, just trying not to identify him, an honorable professional, let's call him, very honorable, who has been involved in some issues that I would certainly say he was a hero. And I said to him, I'm looking for the legal basis upon which some prosecution could be brought here. Not that I can bring it, but just to establish that there is some kind of precedent in law for going ahead with a case here if somebody wanted to bring it. And his answer was, why are you wasting your time on this? This makes no sense at all. You're better than that. I was just knocked off the chair. I couldn't believe that response.
Really?
And it just shows, I mean, among people that you would even assume are upright, honorable, because they are. You've got evidence. You've seen their track record. They just do not even recognize this. It's as if you said nothing at all. It's as if nothing happened. It's as if you brought up nothing. So I go back to the first point that I made, that people they control their own minds to be completely unaware of this, to not see it, not understand it, not realize the implications, of any of the implications that we've been talking about here.
Well, it's always designed for a topic like this. If you bring it up, it's on. I go back to this thing about socially prestige. You lower your social prestige if you raise it. It's very, you know, there are 20 different reasons why it's going to be bad for your status and bad for your career to bring this up. And it's quite phenomenal the way it's engineered. I also wanted to mention, I think globalization has, in one sense, exacerbated the problem because we have sex tourism in the developing nations has become such a huge business and has done nothing but satisfy more and more appetites. You know, one of the things I worry about is the empire gets more and more ridiculous and engages in these practices of rounding up the kids or sex tourism all around the world. You can imagine what it's doing to the reputation of Americans and Westerners. I mean, we're basically viewed as rapists.
Right. No question about it.
And I will say this, you know, slave trafficking, I think, is at an all-time historical high that we know of. So the trafficking with globalization, it appears to me, has increased tremendously.
Then there's Hollywood.
Right.
So Hollywood is basically leading the charge, in a sense, to deflect all of this, as if, well, you can argue about the age of some of these kids. You know, what is the real? We're not talking about the legal age of consent, but, you know, what's the real age of consent where the child is aware enough to, you know? And we've seen scandals, the tip of the icebergs emerge with, you know, pedophilia in Hollywood and Corey Feldman and so forth, and, where it's almost like a social position, like a manifesto. You can't touch the subject in terms of any morality whatsoever, because the morality is we are raising sexual awareness at a younger and younger age. That would be in heavy quotes, you know, so that people can be, quote, liberated. And of course, who knows how many Hollywood celebrities and stars and people in the industry who are in high positions are involved in this themselves. So they are already captive and can't say anything, even if they wanted to. But the culture that's being disseminated is, oh, this is not really an issue. The only issue is the liberation of children from their parents and to have an independent, quote, point of view about their own sexual behavior, and this is what we're fostering, and there is no coercion involved at all, and so on and so forth, and blah, blah, blah. So there, you essentially have staunch defenders of pedophilia, is what you've got. They don't say that, but that's what they're doing. That's the culture that they are disseminating.
One of the reasons I've made such a fuss about corporate schools where kids are online 24/7, you know, with technology online, is, you know, I've basically said, look, you're giving 24/7 access, whether it's being online or being in these corporate schools, to your children, to the elites. Do you really want to do that? Because, you know, they are perpetually on the lookout for pretty kids and, you know, spare organs. Do you really want to do that? You know, I think it's really important if you can understand that the people who run the society believe in slavery and view children as an economic resource to be used, whether it's for pedophilia or medical experiments or everything else. You need to understand that you're not dealing. You might as well assume they're aliens, because if you look at their attitude towards your children, they are as if aliens.
I so have to you might jump as well just assume that. Another factor, and that is, and I've written about this, a bill now up before the California legislature that is the sort of follow-on bill to the Mandatory Vaccine Act that was passed, requiring all school children, public school children, private school children in California to be vaccinated. Well, now we have something called SB 18, which is on the surface what looks like something very harmless, because it isn't even legislating anything specific into action. It's sort of paving the way for later legislation. But it asserts a children's bill of rights, which is a very devious thing. The right to an education, the right to optimum development in their lifetime, and all sorts of things, you know, some of which are just, you know, absolutely not legislatable at all, regardless. The right to, you know, freedom and health care and so forth for every child who is a resident of California. It makes no distinction among immigrants or citizens, this, that. Just if you're there, this is your right. So I tracked this down to some sort of a group that's centered in Sacramento in a local department of education in schools. You know, who are these people? Superintendent, a few other minor bureaucrats who have fashioned and are supporting this children's bill of rights. And then I tracked back that to something called the Silicon Valley Foundation, I think is the name. Wow. Now we're talking about all the big high-tech companies in Silicon Valley. And this foundation happens to have something like $4 to $7 billion under their stewardship. Now we're talking about something major here. And what we're really talking about is disassociating and separating children from their parents and from their families. Because if you read with understanding and you know something, for example, about the United Nations children's rights programs and all of this, what they're basically saying is that the child is the ward of the state and the state has absolute control, not the family. And they're couching it in a children's bill of rights, which they believe that very few people will oppose because it sounds so correct. And this all goes along with what we're talking about here.
Right.
The removal of any ultimate parental authority in the family and substituting, quote, the state for that, which opens the door or opens Pandora's box to any number of these perversions and uses of children without
right.
consent.
Right. Right. And that's, you know, you never want to get in a situation where you have centralized control of children and, you know, can jump over first their parents or any of the local people involved in educating or bringing up children, because then you've got, you know, you've got basically what you're doing is you're giving the world's largest pedophilia network direct access to your kids
through foster homes, for example, because then now
right.
you see, if you violate the Children's Bill of Rights, then Child Protective Services can come in and they can inspect and they say, well, you know, no good, we're taking the kid, putting him in foster
right homes. And we have a real I think what's happening, my guess is you have a whole network of contractors who are working for child services, and they're basically running procurement systems,
sure.
which is why, you know, when you consider delivering kids up into that system, you know, it's something different. It may be something different than you think it is, and you need to be very, very careful. I've literally told families, you've got to move to a new state right now, you know, because they're coming after you, and you've got to get out of there. It's that dangerous. So there are a few things I also wanted to bring up, and that is I've seen a lot the use of false accusations about pedophilia used against the innocent parties. So you know, you have to be very careful when the accusations start, because, you know, I've seen the innocent attacked with this more than I've seen the guilty attacked with this.
Right.
And there's no doubt, if you look at the number of, for example, government employees who've gotten nailed by child pornography, and I do believe they're using entrainment and other technology to sort of get people hooked on this stuff. So I think you have to be very, very careful when the accusations start flying. But I, John, I believe that the reason that this issue is so important is the question before us, and I just finished doing my scenarios for the annual wrap-up. The most important question before us is, are we going to be a human or inhuman society? And I think these techniques have been used to sort of indoctrinate people into an inhuman society. And we're really at a precipice. I think it's one of the reasons the whole campaign in the United States, the presidential campaign, got so fractious, because you have so many people who've just said, look, what's going on is inhuman and we're not going to tolerate it. Now, there are, you know, different people on different sides, different definition of what is human, a lot of manipulation going on. But I think this is at the heart of, you know, can we have a society where we can trust each other? Because if you have this much mind control and this much, you know, sort of torture and manipulation by elites, and it's tolerated by the general population, it destroys trust. We can't trust each other. And it's happened to way too many people, whether they want to face it or not, or whether they want to realize it or not. You know, and it's kind of, it's a, I don't know, it's something that needs to get aired. You know, if anything needs sunshine, it's these issues where we have tolerated inhuman treatment of each other. And I think that's got to stop. So I, for one, don't know how to do that other than bringing transparency to it, because I think it's a symptom of this greater issue. Are we going to be a human or inhuman society? I mean, I absolutely think these people want to chip everybody and mind control them through the smart meters and cell towers. And you can see the history of that evolving into that if you understand what's been going with pedophilia or some of these other things, you know, the radiation experiments. But I think the time has come when we have to face the inhumanity of what we've been living with and say no more.
I couldn't agree more. I think you're absolutely right. It has to be aired, has to be made transparent. And people have to, individuals and families have to build out from where they are. In other words,
right.
Who are your friends? Who is your family? Who are your associates that you trust? What are you doing? What do you really want to do? Do it. Build where you are something extremely positive.
Right.
Expand it as far as you can, instead of looking to some remote point and saying, well, I'm going to put all my eggs in that basket, because I know a lot of people who have put all their eggs in the Trump basket, for example.
Right.
Well, I understand that. And I mean, I could sit here and talk for a couple hours on two or three things that he's done that are absolutely revolutionary.
Right.
Maybe the most primary of which is he is helping to destroy major media. Nobody who's ever occupied the Oval Office has ever tried anything like that. But anyway. It's the people. It's not the man. It's the people who are still human, who are still alive, that are important. Because in so many ways, the society is being engineered technocratically in order to create a species on the planet that, however it's arranged, through technology and so on and so forth, through mind control techniques, to be inhuman, to be impervious,
right,
to have no empathy whatsoever, and most importantly, to follow orders, to be right. slaves. That is happening. That is continues to happen. It's been happening for a long, long time. It's been a problem for the controllers, especially in the United States and parts of Europe. How do we do this? Because we've got some, you know, we've got some old-fashioned rebels all over the place in these few countries. They're important countries, and we need to bring them to heel. How are we going to do this? Through a variety of means, so that they no longer are tough, independent, smart, and resistant.
Right.
Who demand their freedom.
One of my fantasies has been, how do we create committees, you know, in every county in America or every place that can help people get free of their control files? So, you know, we create a detox room. They can go and confess everything that's in their control files. We can agree we're going to protect them. And then, you know, that's the good housekeeping seal of approval. And then when the, you know, they attacked people with the dirt, the way they attract, you know, attack Trump, whether it was true or not, you know, the committee can say, don't worry about this. This guy's got the good, you know, the housekeeping seal. So don't believe anything here. You know, so how can we protect people from whether it's made up accusations or real accusations? You know, maybe they really do have dirt in the control file, but we have to find a way to help everybody get out of slavery, especially if they're willing to come clean. And because there are just too many people inside the, you know, inside the invisible prison of control files.
Yeah, that's a big, that's a tall order. I don't know that I have, you know, ready made answer for that. But the first step is the transparency that you're talking about and what we're talking about here, that more people become aware of this and understand what's going on and that it isn't, in the largest scope, this is not some rare exception. This is the way business has been done for thousands of years.
Right.
And if you look at the basis of the American Republic in the best possible light, the implication is that this has to stop, that something new has to happen.
But let's talk about the magnitude. If Pizzagate blows, you could see, you know, and Pizzagate doesn't involve just pedophilia. It involves huge money laundering networks. But you could literally see if Pizzagate really blew completely, I'm not saying it would, but if it did, you could see 25-50% of Congress having to resign.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about a real revolution. It could be pretty extraordinary.
Yeah.
And it's going to lead back into every, it's going to lead back into every county, every town. You know, if you're not implicated, you know, some of your friends or family are going to be implicated. It's that deep. It's going to hit everybody.
If you read the Franklin cover-up, you see how that is the case. Because it starts out, you begin to read, and you think you're looking at something local, very local.
Oh, no. Right.
You
no.
are. You were looking at that, but you're looking at a great deal more. And slowly you begin to see how it all, the branches and the networks go out from there. And you understand how widespread it actually is.
Right.
But it begins at home, you know, with a few absolute lunatics who have enough control so that, and people who are being blackmailed, so that the local legislature, as you mentioned, I've seen I can't remember the name of the documentary, pretty good documentary on the Franklin cover-up, which was filmed by a British company that came over here and tried to get in. And they talked with one of the primary legislators back in Nebraska who was attempting to bring all this into light. And they go through in somewhat excruciating detail all the attempts and the struggles. and how the legislature was overcome by the people who had bigger seats of power and bigger connections in the long run, and how it was all sidetracked.
Right. If you follow the Franklin cover-up back and go to where I really think it goes, you know, it goes all the way to the top. And it's not that many steps to get there once you start looking at the flows of money and power around it. So, and what I would mention is for all these different examples of where it's been documented, I'm going to put the links up in the subscriber link. So if you're listening to this, check the website, because there's plenty of information if you want to follow it. Well, before we close, John, I just want to talk about how you protect your children, your grandchildren, your nieces, your nephews. If there are children in your life that you love, how do you protect them from this?
Well, I think that you can talk to kids without going into the kind of detail that would be extremely upsetting and maybe incomprehensible to them, to let them know, you know, what's at stake here, what's going on, so that they can be vigilant, and of course you remain vigilant yourselves, without unnecessarily inhibiting their lives to the point where, you know, in order to protect them from slavery, you make them into slaves. I mean, that's not the solution. That can't be the solution. So it takes more than one person, you know, the family. Who is the family? Who are the children? What is the family going to do? You know, as I never tire of saying, you invent your own future. Well, in the terms that we're talking about here, what does that mean in terms of play, freedom, open space, family activities, friends, etc., etc.? It can be done. You can invent, so to speak, a terrific background for the lives of your children if you do it consciously, with help from friends, from other people in the family, so that lots of great things happen. But they're happening within a framework where you're not taking excessive chances and exposing your kids to, you know, horrendous possibilities. It used to,
right,
it used to be when I was a kid, there were open spaces everywhere. So the parents didn't really have to be concerned. You know, I would leave home on a Saturday morning early with a little bit of breakfast, and I would come home at night, and the rest of the day was playing on playgrounds, on fields, on open spaces with my friends, everywhere around the city where I grew up, because it was safe, because nobody cared, because insurance companies weren't, you know, harassing people and saying, you can't have kids playing here because if there's an accident, we're not going to pay the claim, and all this kind of insanity. It was all free and open, and everything was great. So it didn't really require an effort on the part of my family or the family of my friends to put into being environments where we could do these kinds of things. We did it ourselves. But now it's not really the same in a lot of places. It just isn't. So that has to be created consciously by families working together.
Right, and I would say you also have to be very careful of who your children associates with, and you have to, you know, the due diligence, you know, way back when you could just assume everybody was fine, you know, maybe you shouldn't have, but I would be very careful in your due diligence of schools and your due diligence of, you know, if your child is staying over at somebody else's home, don't just assume because they look perfectly normal that they're not capable of something like this. So I think you have to be very discerning. And more than anything, you need your child to feel absolutely comfortable to talk to you about anything. So, you know, children are scared to bring these things up and talk about them. So part of it is just creating an environment where a child feels very, very safe to bring anything to you. So, but I just think we're going to, you know, we're going to have to deal with our kids seeing disclosure about this on TV, on the news, or hearing about it at school. We also have to be, I think, very careful because with online systems, you're creating with an iPhone or with a computer, you're creating an avenue for the pedophilia networks to communicate directly with your children and use very powerful technology and techniques to do it. And so you need to be careful about how they're using online access and what they're doing online, because there's a certain amount of communication, entrainment, and poaching going on that you need to be careful about.
Yeah, that's a tough area, and it has to be handled. You can't just assume that everything is going to be okay. And I agree with you about, you know, who are your kids playing with? What's going on? I mean, it's just not the same kind of time that it used to be, where nobody cared because pretty much everybody was okay, with a few exceptions. But you could see those exceptions. They weren't really that hard to spot in most cases. Now it's a whole different world. And so, you got to treat it differently.
Right. So just, you know, one of my favorite quotes from the Buddha is, you know, I'm not wise, I'm awake. Or those who live in a state of, those who are awake live in a state of constant amazement. So I think it's just a matter of paying attention and understanding that this stuff goes on, it's real, and you want to make sure, you know, the child is your child is enjoying the environment that you want and not the environment that, you know, is advantaging, whether it's a pedophilia network or somebody who thinks your child is their economic resource. It's not. Okay, well, John, this has been very useful. I appreciate you doing this. And, of course, if Pizzagate does blow...
We'll be around for that one, huh?
The Rappaport foo dog will be around attacking.
So we'll do it together.
Yeah, but nobody does it like you. I have one ally. When I go and visit him and his wife, I'll get up in the morning and I'll hear him shrieking with laughter, and I know, oh, he's reading Rappaport's new column. Anyway, John, thank you for joining us on the Slayer Report. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Catherine. Great.
Thanks. Bye.